And I think that, you know, with all of the training scenarios, I mean, with a gadget, you know, you can buy it. It's a piece of hardware. It's going to be there in the aircraft. We see the problem now with trying to get pilots to go back for recurrent training or doing a, you know, very thorough annual flight review or doing any kind of extracurricular training. So how is it that we encourage them and then police them, if you will, to keep them going on a regular basis into this kind of training, you know, regardless of whether it's an enhanced envelope or anything else? How do we encourage those folks to go do it? Because they find excuses not to do it.
That's the, I think, the big advantage of the VR goggles is that the newer, younger people are more likely to accept that and to think that that's something that would be fun to do.
How about the, so for the situational awareness trainer, it's very intriguing, right, that you got the acoustics back into the game, but the way he's communicating the pilot was with an audible wind noise low. Is that, I was looking for other ways that this thing could communicate to us, almost like it sticks wind noise back in your headset, I don't know, but what do you guys think about that? I'm not convinced of how it's applied in an actual operational environment yet.
Well, unlike a lot of the others, he was a big proponent of using this for training, and I think you might ignore it if it's off to the side for training. This is one where I actually do think it could be an emergency situation or show you an off-nominal situation. And just like your ears, I think our computer logic is getting close enough to differentiate a lot of this stuff. So I really do believe it's possible. I think he's got a long way to go. I think how it's displayed and when it is important still needs some work, but I believe he should continue this and work on this process.
The one thing I didn't really still understand, and maybe it's just because I'm not that smart up here, you guys are all smarter than I am, but, you know, the double tapping and getting that feedback, how often am I supposed to do that? And at critical phases of flight, when am I supposed to be tapping? Because as I'm cranking final, I don't want to be tapping. I want to be
a friend.
So at the conclusion of that thought, our judges have run out of their 10 minutes, but they will still actually have additional time in the back. So again, thank you so much for giving us that insight into your deliberations, into your thought process. So for the audience, now is when we would like for you to get your phones out. You should see on the screen the number that you would text your selection. So I'm not seeing that number on the repeater screens back here. Okay, super. And how you'll do this is you'll just simply text a number. You're only picking your favorite submission, and you'll text that number to the phone on your cell. So for example, the feel flight grip, the stick with the pins for Jack Honer, that was your selection, you would text number one. Number two was the enhanced scenario based training. Those were the VR goggles. That's number two. Number three is Ed Wischmeyer, reducing loss of control accidents to keep our friends alive. So that's the E3 presentation. That's number three. Ethan Brodsky was number four. That was the buzz ball, so that was the buzzy seat. And then finally, number five, the situational awareness trainer, which was the sound detection unit. That would be number five. So please go ahead and text your submissions. And at the end of the night, please come forward and to claim your pin, your Founders Innovation Prize pin, by showing your submission text. I do now want to pass the podium over back to Jim Payne so he can talk to us about the future of flight.
Hello, once again. It's my pleasure to be the entertainment while the judges are doing their thing. And just listening to those presentations, you know, got me to thinking. Charlie Precourt was an instructor at the test pilot school in my day back at test pilot school. And he actually did a training video for gliders after a glider mishap. And he did an excellent job. And the bottom line is, looking at that video, I would say that the most important thing, of course, is pilot proficiency. And what drives pilot proficiency? And that's cost. So Bernoulli, he has this famous equation which defines the pressure across an airfoil. Is Bernoulli correct? What really causes airplanes to fly? Money, you've got it, okay. So let's imagine for a minute a future where the cost of flying is similar to the cost of having a nice SUV like a Chevy Suburban. So if you look at the manufacturer's recommended retail price for a Suburban, you're talking $50,000 to $70,000 for this vehicle and the associated costs. You know, we all have to realize that general aviation is in decline. You know, I go cross country to airports and there's less and less airplanes sitting on the ramps, and the few that are sitting on the ramps, some of them look like they haven't flown in a long time. But imagine if we, say, had 1 million airplanes built a year. You know, there's like 10 million cars built a year in the U.S. And they were affordable. It really changed the nature of aviation. Now, you know, part of the difference is I have a Suburban that's got like 116,000 miles on it, and it's essentially been trouble-free. At 100,000 miles, the manual says change the spark plugs. So I bought a set of new spark plugs, and I took the old plugs out and compared to the new plugs, and I couldn't see any difference. Because of the unleaded fuel, there's no lead on it, and because I guess they're iridium, the metal hadn't eroded. So the spark gap was exactly the spark gap that was supposed to be on the plug. And if you look at the technology that is currently used in some of our airplanes, you go, you know what, maybe we can learn something from the folks that build cars. Also, if we want to reduce the cost of flying, we should think like glider pilots. You know, as a glider pilot, I always worry about drag. Now, if I have a ASW-27, which is sitting out at the SSA booth, that's a 15-meter class racing airplane. Its best L over D is approaching 50 to 1. So let's say that I'm flying that airplane at 1,000 pounds weight. I've only got 20 pounds of drag when I'm flying at 50 to 1. So if the tape between my wing joint is not there and I have an extra pound of drag, I've lost 5% of my performance. There's a STEMI motor glider here. It's a 50 to 1 sailplane. And at best L over D, 60 knots, it only takes 6 horsepower to fly that airplane. Now, when the CAFE folks tested an RV6A, this is back in the 90s, they discovered that the L over D is about 9 to 1, got 178 pounds of drag, and takes 38 horsepower to fly it. So anything we can do to reduce drag is really going to help reduce the requirement for power, which, of course, reduces requirement for cost. The electric airplane, the Pipenstrahl, you know, it takes about 27 horsepower to go 85 knots with that airplane. And examples of the airplane here on the right is a STEMI. And this is Paul Rosales's RV6. I just talked to Victoria. He's got 4,600 hours on that, so he's got his money's worth from his RV6, and this is the Pipenstrahl. So critical areas where we might improve airplanes and reduce costs: aerodynamics, structures, propulsion, and avionics. Aerodynamics are pretty well studied, and I don't see any major breakthroughs we're going to find in aerodynamics. However, if we have some structural breakthroughs, it will be easier to build wings and fuselage shapes and other shapes that will reduce drag. I talk about unobtainium, that perfect material which has very high strength, essentially no mass, is really cheap, and is easily worked. There's something called graphene, which is a derivative of carbon, And it actually has potential to be this unobtainium, if you will. It has 100 times the strength of steel. And you know, the question is actually weaving the structure. And the other interesting thing about it is it's transparent. Now, I'm not sure what the optics are, but you know, imagine having a structure that you can see through. But the bottom line is these structures will help us have higher aspect ratios, which is really the key to reducing drag. And it helps us to have precise shapes for natural laminar flow.